what type of role do you think our parents play in setting up the base for an entrepreneur?
Great question. So fourth grade or fifth grade, we started homeschooling. Parents wanted to take us out of the system. And in that, I saw how it's possible to really kind of determine and make your own path. Because my dad was busy with different companies where one would fail, he was not shy about that. There was definitely a example or a sense of that it's okay to make a mistake or it's okay to fail.
How would you say you need to structure your life to hear what God is calling you to do?
Be diligent and excellent in whatever you're doing now. Moving from a place of peace and soundness and wholeness in the Lord, He'll open up what opportunities kind of there can be and what your next steps might be.
What are some of the biggest challenges that you've experienced in your entrepreneurial journey?
To realize that it's a journey. It's not gonna be this kumbaya, kind of aspect forever. Guys, I don't know everything. And I'm running this with a 100% reliance on the Lord.
Is it hard to build a business with a friend?
Ooh.
Christian, you're on a mission to employ the world. But before we get there and how that dream came about, who is Christian van den Berg and where did it all start for you?
Who is Christian van den Berg? Christian van den Berg is first and foremost a son of God. I really find my identity in Jesus. And I grew up I was born up in Vanderbijl Park. Yes, the fall of Fatal Duke, as they call it. So hopefully some of that street smart is born into me. But moved down to the Western Cape very young. And grew up in a very entrepreneurial house. My father's an entrepreneur, and we moved around quite a bit, pretty close by. But he would find a house, fix it up, and either make it a guest house or sell it. And so I think by the time I was 16, we'd moved about 17 times. But fun. I think it makes you non-complacent. It makes you open for adaptability and change. Quite a shy child growing up, but definitely found myself always looking where I can kind of help people. I know it sounds a little tacky, but I think you're really blessed to have been raised by two parents that love the Lord a lot, and that really showed me the value of caring for people and loving people. My mom's a psychologist, so that was maybe intentionally bred into me as well. Just had the help of people on my heart for since a very young age, and not really knowing where I was going. Kind of with that from a career perspective, obviously as a kid you don't really think about that too often. I mean, from being a musician to an artist to an astronaut to an athlete, I mean, you name it, right? To an architect, I think sometimes. Fourth grade or fifth grade, we started homeschooling as well. My parents wanted to take us out of the system, just to really zone in on the way we think, critical thinking. And in that, I saw how it's possible to really kind of determine and make your own path, not just really conform to the world and kind of the patterns of it, if I can use that term. Probably due to the fact that my parents set that example. And so moving to high school, I went to Paul Boys, school in Paul, as the name says, Paul Boys. I went to the hostel there, and I think then kind of, really found a bit more confidence, as I mentioned, quite a shy child, really found a bit more confidence there in saying my say, in knowing that I've I can make friends. I can kind of run with the jocks, and not from a sporting perspective, by no means. I played, I think, eighth team rugby in high school, but just from a confidence perspective, really, I think found my voice a bit there. And then, yeah, went through varsity on an accounting route. My dad was a CA, and so I found maybe that's just a good base. Right, maybe it's a safe way to, if I'm not yet sure what I'm going to do, but I know it might be something, my own business someday, helping people. What better of a base to have than the boring kind of safe fallback of being a CA? And moving into articles, I found that I definitely did not want to be a practicing accountant. But it taught me a lot about discipline. It taught me a lot about time management. And during my articles, I started with this idea of how can I help people that were maybe not as fortunate as I was. So looking for article work, I found work pretty easily, just because there's a really high demand for article clerks, because it is slave labor, as you might know. Pay you peanuts for a lot of work. But I found even my friends that had other tertiary qualifications and those that didn't really struggled to find work. And so really kind of just planted that seed in me as to shucks, are people maybe not prone to being able to sell themselves, or don't they have the accessibility thereto, or are they just not channels at which they can get connected to opportunities? And so during my second year of articles, my mother-in-law actually asked me if I can arrange a few promoters for an event, and I quickly arranged a few. Money came through me, and about a week later, their friends and their friends and their friends' friends asked me if I have more of these opportunities. And it dawned on me, oh yeah, unless you belong to some elite WhatsApp group or Facebook group, you never knew of these opportunities, right, that you don't need a qualification for. And did a few dry runs, found that there's really a need for that in the market, and then dove into some research to see, is there a dominating player anywhere in the globe taking on this issue, right, like entry level or frontline type opportunities, and saw that there wasn't a dominating player. And so from that birthed this idea of JobJack, and how can we really take on unemployment in South Africa but also employ the world in the rest of the world.
Sure. What a journey.
Yeah, sorry, that was a mouthful. I got carried away there a bit.
Let's go back to the role that your parents played in you becoming an entrepreneur. Do you think that the way your father operated had a significant contribution to you wanting to become an entrepreneur, even though at that point you might not have known what exactly that could be? But what type of role do you think our parents play in setting up the base for an entrepreneur?
Great question. So I definitely think so. I mean, my dad showed me very well that you kind of determine your circumstances. It's not something that you need to be entitled for as to earning a monthly salary. He always had to make a plan ever since I was kind of conscious enough to know what he does. He did obviously have some corporate jobs before, but I mean, throughout my upbringing, he was always busy with a different type of business or a plan of growing his current business. And so I think that kind of just really implanted into me that whichever way I go, it's in my control, and not, I'm not at the mercy of some employer or some kind of corporate structure or corporate society. And so I think that opens up your mind to a whole lot of ideas, right? I think a lot of people grow up with a precise example of what work is and what kind of a corporate job is, and there's not really scope to think outside of that box. And I was really just, yeah, privileged enough to grow up in that way where he set that example, and probably my mother as a psychologist played a role in giving that confidence in, you know, having that self-assurity and that identity in the fact that you can kind of, yeah, as long as you hopefully walking in line with God's will, you know, you can kind of set up and try things. And I think because my dad was busy with different companies where one would fail, he was not shy about that, right? He shared that with us as well. So there was definitely an example or a sense of that it's okay to make a mistake or it's okay to fail. And I think if that fear is broken a bit, obviously it's to a degree, probably always going to be there. But it opens so much more opportunity where you can try a lot of things. And I think I remember even, you know, through high school and even university, I had a few little side hustles where I sold X, Y, or Z, or, you know, try to start up this or that idea, and very much supported by my parents. So I definitely think your parents allowing you that freedom plays a big part, as opposed to, you know, someone relying on a constant safe upbringing. Maybe my dad almost fell to the other side of things, but I mean, I'm grateful for it.
Why did you choose to rather start your own business when you like kind of weighed up the options in terms of there is this opportunity where you connect the job to the employer? Why did you decide to kind of take on this responsibility yourself rather than just go and work for a company that does something similar, like a recruitment company or something like that?
Yeah, well, good question. No one's actually ever asked me that question. So I think because... And this might sound a little self-conceited, but I really trusted that the Lord put this on my heart. And so from what I could see, what was out in the industry or the world already were money-hungry, kind of take everything they can from the current placements they're already doing, so the current kind of employment placements they're doing. That being said, it was also in a complete different market, right? So it was for more skilled or professional type. I mean, as I mentioned, doing the research, I really found that there was no one looking at this problem for people that don't have tertiary education in connecting them with opportunities, and no one doing that at scale. And so probably had too much, probably in a naive way, too much confidence in my own ability to really take on this problem at scale, but with a good heart. And I think that's something we... my co-founder and I always really convey to our team is what we do is a type of a land grab, a type of a, what they refer to as a winner-takes-most market, right? It's a dual marketplace. And we want to get there first, not out of greed, but out of a place that we really feel we have the right intention and the right heart. And if someone else might get there, they might really tap each of these desperate job seekers for all they're worth, because these people are so vulnerable. And so I think that really played a big part in me diving into it and starting the company myself, as opposed to joining someone else. And I mean, for all practicalities, I couldn't find someone else doing it anyway. Mm.
You mentioned that you have a partner in the business, which I believe is also a good friend of yours. Is it hard to build a business with a friend?
Ooh, it's an absolute treat. I cannot see where our company would be without my co-founder, Hein. I think it really helped, one, that we were friends before we started the business. Not for very long, mind you, we met during our articles, but also that we share the same worldview or biblical beliefs. And so I think with that as anchor, it's been really easy to navigate your strengths and weaknesses, because everything I say to him, he receives from a place of good intent, and likewise. So we can constantly correct each other, keep each other accountable, and know that we're steering towards the right path, and we can keep each other on that path as well. And so there's an amazing respect we have for one another's abilities and for one another's intention. And so I really don't know how people do it alone. I mean, I can see how you could. And they always say, right, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And both our intentions are to go really far with this. So it's been an absolute treat. And I can see by strength to strength why it's been so important for us to have taken this on together. And I grew up as a twin. So I've never really been alone. And so starting the company, I immediately knew I didn't want to take on this alone. And so I knew he just thought differently than I did. We at JobJack, we believe with surrounding ourselves with people that are better than we are. And so I knew he was definitely better than I was at a lot of things, systematized thinking, strategy. And so I said, come share the journey with me. Let's run it together.
How do you guys keep your work relationship, your professional relationship, and your friendships separate?
There's no separation, really. In all honesty, we and it, that might sound a little unhealthy, but I think we we do tend to not speak about work if we are having a braai with our wives that are there as well. I think that's for me it's obvious, but maybe pretty important to say. But I think because we see our work as part of our calling and part of our life, there's not been an unhealthy kind of haul into just work. We both set quite a healthy example with regards to limits as to how long we work, and working into a weekend, working into the evening or so forth. It's not really something we do, and so I think that conversation and that constant reminder of having that work-rest balance and seeing work as part of calling, part of life, has really helped almost balance it out and separate the friendship side of things with regards to work side of things. It's like doing life with a friend, right? If you're going to take them on with something that's lacking, it's the same thing. Because we're seeing work as just part of our life and part of our calling, it's never been needed to really separate kind of this whole professional identity and personality from a after work drinks personality.
Let's talk about that a little bit more. I think some of the discussions we had just before the podcast led to emotional health within entrepreneurship, and that's obviously something that I'm very passionate about and something that I've struggled with in the past, but I think there's a lot more focus that needs to be put on how entrepreneurs run their lives, conduct themselves within a family capacity, within a work capacity, within a friendship capacity. How do you set those boundaries? How do you structure your life to keep yourself with enough energy and time for your family? You now have a lovely boy as well, with your family, with your friends, and while being super productive and effective at work. How does your typical structure look like to protect those areas in your life?
Okay, yeah, cool. Exciting topic and question. So I gave a lot of credit to my dad with regards to setting the example. And in this case, he also set an example, but one that I learned from more as opposed to imitated. In the fact that because he didn't necessarily have one specific office where he could kind of separate things, there was a lot of overflow into the household. From a young age, I could see that that's something he strived for, but couldn't always get right from a practical sense. And so I think from a super young age, even moving into my first job in articles, I really tried to separate the two. I think what helped is I kind of carried on with some of my studies during articles. So I had a very valid excuse to separate work hours or job hours from my studies. And so moving into the business, Han and I share this right going into things, is that we need to be a leader for our family first before we are a leader at work. And we can only do that if we first tapped into the Lord. Just practically, we don't really work, or I myself, as given the season I'm in, my boy is almost 2 years old now, so that is quite a shock to the system. If you're growing a company, both are full-time, working parents, and you're living in Cape Town, so there's a lot of activities to do with friends, outside activities, et cetera. And so what we set out to do is really to try and say, okay, the Lord has given me a specific amount of hours to focus on my day-to-day job, right? And I might have touched on it earlier, but really seeing life as not a work-life balance or separation that the world speaks to, but more of a work-rest balance, because work is seen as this negative, separate from life aspect. If you're looking at work-life balance, right? But if you look at what the Lord intended for work to be, it's kind of a holy labor, right? It's serving him in various types of aspects, and your let's say 8-to-5 job is just a component of work, in quotation marks, because what we can do from serving our community, from being with friends, from serving our family can also count as work, right? Personal admin can also count as work. But as soon as you're gonna open up to saying, okay, what I'm doing from my 8-to-5 is part of my calling, it's part of my life, then you're not seeing his work separate from life. And I'm careful to say this because then people can easily, you know, run with it and say, okay, well, then there has to be no separation. What I'm saying is there needs to be a work-rest balance, because in that rest is in spending proper time resting, one, in the Lord, and then two, with your family. Because if you're going to try and integrate everything and overflow everything, then it's going to run away with you, and you're probably going to run ahead of what the Lord wants you to do. And so I think moving into this company and where we want it to go in the future, our vision is employ the world. It's quite an audacious and a big one. I knew it's not something that I'm going to get right in my own strength. So that's a known. So is it going to help if I put in 20-hour days? No, because anyway, can't do it, right? So let's try and cap it at a certain agreed upon hours, let's say 10 hours a day. And I say, okay, Lord, use me properly in that 10 hours. And for him to be able to use me properly in that 10 hours, I need to be well rested. I need to move from a place of peace. And that place of peace comes when you rooted in him. So you've put him time with him as a first priority. And then second, you've put time with your family as a second priority. Work comes after that. And so very clear kind of just boundaries between my job or office hours and time with my family. So I don't really work after, let's say, 5:30 in the afternoon, and don't really work over weekends at all. Obviously, you know, there might come an exception here or there, but that's really the exception. I mean, in the past 4 or 5 years that this company has been running, I can probably count on my two hands the amount of times that that's happened. And so it's been a real kind of privilege to be able to keep each other as founders accountable in that. And obviously we go through different seasons, right? He doesn't have a child yet. And a child really comes and puts any bit of routine that you thought you had, throws it out the window completely. And so, you know, with that, and I think I mentioned it to you just in our earlier conversation, I was going at a time, you know, through a time last year, just after he was born, with, okay, cool, up until now I've been able to give enough time to my wife, I've been able to give enough time to my friends, obviously, you know, some nice quiet time, I'm working, the company's growing, and I'm exercising, I'm out surfing, you know, climbing mountains or whatever the case may be, but I'm not feeling I'm getting to any, you know, anything properly, or I want to get to more, you know, the whole time. And so it kept on bugging me that I wasn't getting to everything more. And I'm super blessed to be a part of an amazing accountability group. We've been meeting once a week for the past 10 years. And they challenged me to say, well, it looks like you're heading towards that space of overexerting yourself, right? Of what the, you know, could always almost even be labeled as, you know, heading towards something that looks like burnout. And even though I was full of energy. And so it was, they kind of, you know, the advice was, let's go prioritize. What does your priorities look like? And it came down to, cool, Lord first, then family, then work. And then, I mean, I need to look at my body, so exercise, and then friends. And so that helped me so much in kind of just knowing what I need to spend time on first. And so in this season where I have a kid, where I really want to spend time with him, it's the Lord, it's family, and it's work. All the rest, it'll come in a different season. Yes, I try and, you know, exercise a little bit every now and then when it's possible. I do get to friends, we invite them over to our house more because it's easier with children. And so that doesn't disappear by no means. But I've really, I think, been blessed in the way that I've not yet had to sacrifice friendships or relationships or any, you know, super, you know, kind of healthy habits have had to be sacrificed in order to grow this company, because I think we really rely on the Lord's provision and the Lord's strength as opposed to our own.
Sure. There was a lot of things, a lot of powerful insights there. There are a couple of things that I want to touch on there, one being the importance of an accountability group. Why do you think, especially for a generation like us, where people, especially friends, are careful to not necessarily reprimand you or be nasty, but to highlight things when they see something is going wrong? Like, what have you seen the accountability group do for you, and why would you recommend that as something for people to have?
Sure. I mean, yeah, I don't know where I would be without my friendship group without my accountability group, and my friendship group isn't limited to those 7 or 8 individuals. But looking at the journey we've walked, so a bit of context, our group's name is My Brother's Keeper, coming from kind of the time where Cain murdered Abel, right? And God comes down and he asks Cain, where's your brother? Where's Abel? And Cain says, what am I, my brother's keeper? And from our sense, we were like, yes, we are supposed to be our brother's keeper. We should know where our brother is and what he's going through, and we need to carry his burdens. We need to walk that journey with him. His kind of well-being is just as important as ours, right? We really need to walk this, run this race together. And so I think in that, and what it's meant to me is where I'm, you know, blind to something, running after my own ambitions, even though it might be a good intended one, because I think that's generally the problem we see nowadays. Everyone labels something as a very positive intent, right? We're hustling, we are growing this company, we are, you know, being effective, we're busy. But in that, you can so easily kind of just lose track of finding peace and kind of really prioritizing what the Lord's called you to do. And you can run, you can easily run ahead of him. And so whether you're spiritual or not, like it's something that's so detrimental to your, yeah, to your well-being and to you as a person. And so what the group has really kind of been able to do is, because we're so open with each other and meet regularly, it's really easy for us to spot each other's blind spots and for us to challenge one another, right? So we've allowed ourselves or allowed permission for one another to really speak into our lives. And I think in that, you're asked the tough questions. So I can easily go tell them, yeah, our company is doing X, Y, Z, and, you know, kind of we aiming at, you know, earning this amount or, you know, kind of growing this. And they can say, okay, that's cool. Great for you. Well done. What has the Lord said about this? Or is this where the Lord wants you to go? Or what are you going to do with that money? Or are you sure that this is kind of the sustainable route? And above all that even, okay, but I just asked you how it is, and that was the first question you said. Why haven't you said what's going on in your quiet time? Why haven't you told me how it's going with your wife? Is your wife growing just as well or better? That she should be growing better as your company? Or are you spending just as much time with your child? And so I think in that, it really just, it's that constant reminder of what are our priorities according to what we feel and what we can, you know, obviously speak into each other's lives or pray about each other. And as we all go through different seasons, we learn something different. And I think just having that constant check, you know, kind of has been, you know, incremental in just keeping each other on track. And obviously we go through different seasons. So some focus might be on a specific person for an amount of time. But yeah, it's been surreal.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned there's something that, and in the previous question as well, where God calls us and he directs our steps into a certain direction so we know what we need to do. And you also mentioned it in the very, very start of the conversation in terms of leading you to start Job Jack. Often we find that difficult to understand and know what God actually wants from us. Like, I think especially about people that are 22, 23 years old, maybe just finished studying, realize that they might not have studied something that they actually want to do for the rest of their life. How would you say you need to structure your life to hear what God is calling you to do? And how do you keep in touch with that? Because as an entrepreneur, you get faced with a lot of instances where there's growth opportunities or difficult situations, and you need to make a call. And you want a clear answer as to whether that's what God wants me to do or whether that's just me trying to solve a problem or because of my own own insecurities or identity issues, I want to do this to make the company look good or whatever. How do we stay grounded in terms of, first of all, knowing what God is calling us to do, and then, second of all, how do we keep grounded and in touch throughout the entrepreneurial journey in your perspective?
Luckily, I studied theology to answer this. No, no. I mean, what little bit of, you know, kind of experience I have in this, I'll try and, you know, kind of provide my opinion on it. Just walking my journey. So obviously, I'm a CA, which is by far nothing to do with what I'm doing, right? In tech, HR tech. People ask me like the whole time, what? Why would you go from such a promising, stable, you know, kind of qualification or direction into this? And I think kind of getting down to your question is, I think first and foremost is sitting with the Lord. I think we forget so much that we need to be building relationship with Him, and not just on a ad hoc daily basis, be asking Him for, okay, Lord, just, you know, give me a little advice here, give me a little advice there, because then we're running our own journey and just trying to include the Lord, right? As opposed to sitting at His feet and hearing where He wants us to go. And I think so one, sitting with Him on a daily, constant basis and allowing Him to speak into your life, not just speaking. I think that's really where you know, the word speaks about being still in front of Him. Like, really be still in front of Him. I think, you know, kind of studying the word also just really should guide you in that. And then from a place of, because I know it's not just that simple, you're not just going to get, I pray that people will get an audible voice, but generally that doesn't happen. And so in that way, whichever season you're finding yourself in is I think we call to serve excellently, right? I think Paul speaks to slaves submit under your masters, right? And that's obviously a horrible different time. But even then, it spoke to be diligent and excellent in whatever you're doing now. I remember going through my articles, like, I mean, week three, I was like, this sucks. Like, I really just don't want to do this. And the Lord convicted me to say, you are here now. Whether it was a choice that you made according to your own ambition or to where I wanted you to be, but you're here now and you need to serve it excellently. And so I remember for like probably 3 months, every morning I just said, I'm going to be the best article clerk that there is. I said it out loud, and within a month and a half, I actually started enjoying it. Whether I was the best article clerk, doubtful. I don't think the partners would say that. I think because I was full of ideas and more focused on the people than the actual audit work. But I think it so comes out of a place of being obedient and being a good steward with what you have, right? The Lord speaks to you, if you're faithful with a little, you'll be faithful with the much. And so I think in that, the Lord first needs you at a place of being content and being at peace with where He has you before He can open a new door. And I think with that, I've found most of the time, if I'm not at peace, if I'm anxious about something, so practical example, right? If there's a new opportunity that JobJet can take on, there's a lot, right? There is a lot. But for those that almost make me anxious, we need to do this. We need to get there because, you know, someone else is going to, or because then I need to check myself, because then I'm not operating from a place of peace. And so peace has been a very good guide for me in sensing that, because the Lord is the Prince of Peace. And so I think just, and I mean, again, without spiritualizing this even, and I speak to quite a lot of founders, like, it's really operating from, not from a place of fear and anxiety, but from a place of rest and peace, that you make your sustainable, smart decisions for specific opportunities. So whether that be from a business perspective or even, you know, a corporate or, you know, general jobs perspective or even kind of life opportunities. I think moving from a place of peace and soundness and wholeness in the Lord, He'll open up what opportunities kind of there can be and what your next steps might be.
Given what you said now in terms of how you reason and how you think and how spirituality and faith plays a big role in your life and in your career, how do you translate that into your company culture? How do you take that from, this is Christian, this is how I operate, this is how I make decisions, this is what is important to me? How do you take all of that and lead a company of 50-odd people to kind of think, see, reason, or learn from you, at least in terms of how you operate? Like, because looking at JobJet's culture, you can obviously see there's something there. There's an energy. There's momentum. There's joy in what you can see and when you engage with your team. Like, How do you instill the characteristics of that you have as a leader into your team to build that culture?
A number of ways. I think one, the fact that I'm only, so I know I've got a bald head. The people that are obviously listening to this can't see it now, but I'm only 29. And so I think that's given me almost an opportunity to be very vulnerable and open with each employee and on a constant basis, say, guys, I don't know everything and I'm running this with a 100% reliance on the Lord. And so we're very honest with regards to the fact that we feel the Lord's given us this mandate, and we are serving Him and stewarding Him in it. We're very honest with the fact that we believe that JobJack does not belong to us or any specific person. It belongs to the Lord. We're just privileged enough to be in the jockey seat, right? And so as a practical sense, we, for each interview with a prospective employee, we pray. We ask them if we can pray beforehand just to set the tone, so that they know this is how we run things. It's not something we force upon anyone. We have a numerous amount of beliefs in the office, but just as a, this is what, why we're doing what we're doing and why we really believe we've got a good heart in doing this, because it's not from a place of selfish ambition. And I think that really sets people at ease regardless of their belief. And then, I mean, practical aspects, like we do open every new week, Monday with scripture and prayer. We have Friday morning praise and worship, and just some prayer and intercession for the team, for those that want to join. And then we've kind of have a guiding a verse which speaks to, so Proverbs 32 verse 89, which speaks to, for speak up for those who are poor and needy, for the rights of all who are destitute. And I think it's, I mean, you don't have to believe in the Bible to want to get behind that at all, right? And so I think it's what's made it easy is our vulnerability in that. It's not a forcing it. We are a Christian company and you shall believe what we believe. It's a, hey guys, just so you know, we are running this in obedience. We don't know what we don't know, and we're relying on God's guidance and strength. So we're figuring it out. And if you want to be part of this amazing journey, as long as you can respect that that's what we believe, we'd love to have you on board. So that's kind of been the sense of how we just conveyed with the team. I think that vulnerability has played a big role in that.
As far as I understand, your team is also quite young, right? What are some of the challenges that you can see from a culture perspective? Like, what is difficult being in an HR space yourself, but what is difficult, what are some of the difficult situations that you've had to experience with having a young team, eager for growth, a large vision of employing the world? Like, how do you get people on board and how do you keep them committed and engaged?
Mm. Yeah. So yes, I think our eldest employee is 33. So it's not something we necessarily pride ourselves on. We have been in a season where we've probably had to convince a few people to come on board for salaries that they might have, you know, been able to get a little more somewhere else. But what's really helped us in getting the right type of people on board as a start, and I'll kind of get to, I think, the second part of your question now, is we set up a long-term vision, right? So generally, the sense in today's society, right, from whether you're speaking about millennials or Gen Z or so forth, is hyper growth, super kind of consumerist need from, I want to grow for me. And so what we really kind of zone in on in our whole hiring process, and what's helped a lot is our person that's in charge of the hiring. She has the same beliefs as we do, and we chose it so specifically so that we know we are hiring someone whose heart is there, not from an individualistic perspective, but from a collective and a mission perspective. And so I think the worries and stresses that companies see with young people being entitled or, you know, kind of wanting to move on to the next level as soon as possible is slightly mitigated with that long-term buy-in that people get. We tell each employee that we are here for the next 20, 30 years, and we want them on board for that. So I think that that already helps out quite a bit. But you still have ambitious people, right? We always say at JobJack, it's a bit of a double-edged sword because everyone that comes on board really believes in the vision. And so thus they have a lot of inputs and opinions, but they have a lot of inputs and opinions. So it's a good problem to have, and I'm saying problem, it's not really a problem, it's an opportunity that just needs to be nurtured in the right way. And I think what we've just done to accommodate this young team that's really eager to grow and learn is we've tried to set up one, you know, people with maybe outside mentors, but we have a lot of one-on-ones, we have a lot of conversations where we think as a collective, probably not as much as we should, but we very honest and open with regards to where we want people to grow towards. As we growing as a company, we need all the more set standards like a personal development plan, your job grading aspect, you know, all the HR lingo that I can start throwing around, that as a legal entity you need to start putting in place. But I think we've been real purposeful in the way that when someone comes on, especially, you know, super young, maybe even coming straight out of varsity, or I think we even have had someone come straight out of high school as well, is really, really set them on what a long-term journey for them could look like. And in that, there's been a real good communication. And if someone's a little frustrated with them not growing at a certain rate, then we can easily kind of revisit where we're going towards, right, and what the company does look like. And yes, some seasons are slower than others, so for some people it might be a little, for us it's even, you know, to a degree a frustration at some times, but I think, yeah, just a long-term buy-in has really, really helped just set the pace for everyone, and the rate that the company is growing has really given light to a lot of growth for people already, so it ticks that box at least as well.
What are some of the biggest challenges that you've experienced in your entrepreneurial journey?
The biggest challenges that I've experienced in my entrepreneurial, that's a very open-ended question. COVID. COVID was a big there. One. So we started in 2018, and for the almost the entirety of 2018, we focused mostly on once-off gig type jobs, right? A promoter at an event or a waiter at a wedding. And by the end of 2018, we got connected to one of the larger corporates, Pep stores, and found that shucks, there's really also not a system that's utilized anywhere in the world that we could find for entry level job frontline workers, and so we pivoted our focus end of 2018, beginning of 2019 to focus more on corporates, because same amount of effort went into an event with three promoters as it did with, you know, chasing KFC or Mr. Price or so forth. And so pivoted our focus and spent the whole of 2019 just figuring out what a commercial model looks like, just adjusting kind of our whole approach. And then end of 2019, beginning of 2020, we're like, okay, we think we have something like that's product market fit. And then what March, COVID hit, and obviously no one was employing at all. And so for the next 9 months, we had nothing. We had a team of, I think back then, seven people. And, you know, my co-founder and I just then had to obviously cut back on any salary. And for the rest, we at least didn't lose anyone. But because we had some amazing investors that unfortunately for them had invested by the end of 2019. But fortunately for us, and it carried us through on kind of a skeleton base. And really just probably in that time gave us perspective to think or time to think, but that was quite a massive challenge. I think for me it was thinking of the people that were part of our team that I just couldn't help grow for a whole 9 month period. So I did go through a space, I think like probably about 2 months into COVID, where I found myself not sleeping for 2 weeks, like at all. And so I was, ooh, okay, this isn't good. I should definitely be sleeping. And so I just realized, okay, I'm a human being as well. My body is going to, you know, experience stress. And so I just put in some really healthy practices, cut out caffeine and alcohol completely, any activities, kind of digital activities, or at least an hour before I slept, and did some cardio, did some serious cardio just to kind of really release those endorphins, and then got to a space where I was okay again, and then just kind of worked through it month day by day, week by week, month by month, and that was, I think, the roughest that we've experienced as a company, or that I've experienced as an entrepreneur. And then obviously from beginning of 2021, things, you know, started opening up. So I think we were about, 7-8 people back then. Obviously we're close to 50 now. So it's grown quite rapidly, and probably then one of the second biggest challenges has been, and touches on what I mentioned earlier, is really, really not only including people into this vision, but having them really feel like they are valued and can take ownership. I think that's been a real tough one for me personally, because my heart is really to include people into our journey and really have them run with it. And if they don't feel like they can run with it, they don't feel like their opinion is valued, then for me that sucks, because then for me that means people are feeling excluded. And I think that's been one of the toughest challenges that I've had to take on, is how do I, you know, kind of take my vision and our vision and decisions as a leadership team and have everyone feel part of that and not just it being thrown upon them. But it's still been, and it continues to be, one of the main focus areas that I look at. But I think that's about a year ago, that was one of the kind of more difficult aspects that I have to work through as well, to realize that it's a journey. It's not gonna be this kumbaya, kind of aspect forever. I think up until about 15, 16 people, it was pretty easy. And then you actually need to put some purposeful structures in place to have people really feel like they're running with it and they can take collaborative ownership.
You mentioned the vision of JobJack, which is employ the world, which is obviously no small task. So why dream so big? Why not just employ South Africa or who we can?
Why not?
I knew you were going to say that, like literally.
We just really believe that that's what the Lord put on our heart. We do, however, also believe if we can get a model of it right in South Africa, then we should be willing to take on the rest of the world with this. And practically, you know, what that looks like a bit more is the market we've decided to take on, which is the entry-level side of the market, is where the most unemployment sits. And so... generally, that is also more in developing countries, third world countries, and because if you look at your developed world, your first world countries, that the unemployment rate is generally quite low, and so what we just felt was, if we can get it right in South Africa and get it right, you know, it's by no means saying we're going to solve unemployment, but if we can at least find a model that could work at scale, then it's something we feel we can share with the world, because. We really feel we have the ability to build at scale. And so we just feel specifically that the Lord's called that for us. And I think we naive, young, dumb and naive enough to believe we can actually do it.
I think that's the beauty of entrepreneurship, right? Otherwise, there won't be big and audacious new businesses starting around. So I think as part of an entrepreneur, you have to have that little... like sense of risk, well, not little, but sense of risk that you're willing to take this risk no matter what it actually brings forward. Last year you were named one of Saika's top 35. What did that mean to you?
It was cool. It was a nice little feather in the cap. I think what it spoke to most for me was the fact that CA should not just be seen as, you know, a boring chartered accountant in practice, but the fact that they were celebrating innovative ideas really, I think, just showed some value that they place on thinking outside the box. It is a bit of a vanity metric or kind of title, in all honesty, and to a degree I felt a little guilty, you know, taking the credit for work that is completely, you know, kind of due to the hard work that the team's been putting in. But if that meant that it opened up some doors for us, that it just gave some validity to entering, you know, or chatting with a new investor or a new client, then we were super thankful for it. So it was a nice reward to say, oh, great, the 7 years that I spent getting the qualification, being paid peanuts, and it was actually summing in. And at least I think I got a bit of the psycho fees back because they hosted a nice dinner. So for what that was worth, yeah.
So as we transition into giving some advice to upcoming entrepreneurs, like what would you say to somebody that's listening to the conversation and thinking about, maybe I should quit my job, maybe I should just take the leap, I'm 25 years old, if I don't do it now, when am I going to do it? What would you say to somebody like that? What should they think about? What should they consider? Like what needs to be top of mind before you make a big decision like that? Because literally it's life altering, good or bad, but it is life altering. As you've gone through your story now, there's amazing experiences, there's highs, there's lows, you learn a lot, you grow, there's a mental game, there's a physical game, there's a leadership game. Before you say yes to that, what do you think entrepreneurs or soon to be entrepreneurs should know or think about? What would you have liked to know before you started?
So I think just before I get to that part, I think something that any would-be entrepreneur can consider is how much time they have at that age. Yes, some people at 25 might already have a family and bless them for that. But you generally have a lot of time regardless. And so, as I mentioned, JobJack started whilst I was doing my articles, also whilst I was doing my honors, and in the same year that I got married. So there was a lot already going on, but I still had time. You have much more time than you think you have. And so I started it, and for the next year and a bit, I still finished up my articles. By the time I jumped in full-time, we already had 3 full-time employees. So I'm not saying that you have to first do something on the side before you jump in. I'm just saying that there's a lot you can test out before you make the leap. It doesn't have to be a blind leap. It can be a very informed leap. Maybe that's the bit of conservative, you know, accountant that I have in me, but doubtful. I've never really been someone that looks at things from a pessimistic or conservative view. It's just logical for me. Test as much as you can before you just dive in. So that's something that can really be considered, is testing. And also, if you have an idea, share it with others. People are so prone to like keep it a secret until they think they've figured it out. The more you test it with people, the more you get feedback as to what is working and what's not working. And I think that's incremental. I think if I knew more of that would have helped me already, because you want things to be perfect and to sound legit before you start sharing it. But the more you can share it with people, the better. And then something I wish I knew a bit more was the fact that people are really open to mentoring and helping. I think if you really just go out on a limb a bit and go ask someone, whether it be over LinkedIn, because that's pretty easy just to really connect with someone and in-message them to ask for advice, just advice, you'll be shocked to see how many people are really willing to give you advice, to give you time of their the time of their day. And so I think if that's something I knew, I would have reached out to a lot of people earlier. You don't have to wait for you to have some idea or product market fit to be able to go ask that advice. And whether it be, I wish also I knew that you can actually guess someone's email. Just go look at the template of their company's email and send them a mail. I've reached a lot of people in that way. A little sneaky pro tip. But that's something that I really think is super valuable to people, because we try and run this on our own as long as possible before we speak to someone. But that's just so counterintuitive, right? So there's a lot more I wish I knew. But that's from the top of my mind, that's what I can think of now.
Exactly what you said there in terms of it could be lonely and we need to surround ourselves with people. Do you think in South Africa we do enough to enable and equip young entrepreneurs to actually do what they can do? Because the reason why I ask that is actually I wish that throughout my journey there was a lot more groups that I could be part of to bounce off ideas. Because, yes, you can ask the person at the braai, like, hey, Kevin, do you think this is a good idea? But if you just go on that opinion of one, it actually might be dangerous. You might be put off your idea, or you might retract, or you might feel that people don't support me. So that's quite dangerous. But also, if there's a group of people that have experienced something similar in terms of they are in their own entrepreneurial journey, but they're also, because I think there's a generational thing as well. Yes, we can listen to 55-year-old and 60-year-old mentors that can put so much value into what you should think about as a leader and skill and development. But also just like, guys, I'm having a tough week. Like, it's really hard. We've lost this, or this opportunity that we thought would come through didn't come through. Like, I think in terms of emotional support and actual advice, there's so much more that we can do in South Africa. And what, in your experience, do you think that could look like?
Sure. So I think, and it's, I'm going to have like a variety of opinions on this, because I think we've unfortunately seen a lot of airy-fairy conversations be offered and facilitated kind of across the country. But usually that almost does more damage than it does good, because people plant ideas of just, I don't know, unrealistic expectations and entitlement, as opposed to diving into the practicalities of things. I think what these conversations need to go about, so even those that are there already, I think there's space that we can, I don't know, have more of these conversations. There's space that we can extend some of the accelerators that are out there, right? I do think there are amazing conversations. You look at something like Startup Grind or Seed Stars or any of the vast amount of kind of initiatives that are out there. I just think that those conversations need to be centered around the practicalities of things a bit more. And when I'm speaking to practicalities, I'm speaking from, yes, let's look at kind of your business model. Let's look at practically testing something like an MVP. Let's look at practically what you need to do to address your well-being, right? Because people speak about, yeah, we need to look at mental health, mental well, but it's conversations. It's just airy-fairy kind of, yes, we do need to do that, and let's not overwork ourselves. But let's talk about what we need to actually physically put in place, right? Let's remove our notifications from our phone. Let's not have access to our emails let's switch that off, you know, after 5 o'clock and not have access to our emails over. Let's not have people bother you after 6 o'clock at night or over weekends. I think people forget that we were made to rest a full day once a week completely, right? That's one of the Ten Commandments, actually. So, like, people remember, let's not murder. But alongside, let's not murder. Let's rest once a week. And so I think just the discussions that are currently being held or that can be added really just need to focus on the practical side of things, because I think that's what people on a day-to-day need, because they don't know what they don't know. And whether that be more podcasts, whether that be YouTube videos, whether it be what you guys are doing is amazing. I wish I had more time to, you know, post something additional on LinkedIn every now and then. I think the example can definitely be set more by entrepreneurs, and I'll be the first to be guilty of not doing that enough. But I think those examples need to be set from a practical standpoint.
I also think it's difficult for entrepreneurs to be vulnerable enough sometimes. Like, we want to portray this vision of success and everything is going well and we're flourishing in our careers and everything. But many times there are days, weeks, months that you really feel that you're overworked and it's really just getting too much. And I think it's especially in those times where we have to have groups or some sort of space that we can safely reach out to with people that are knowledgeable and have experience in the same arena that we operate in, to just provide some, like you said, emotional support and well-being. What are some of those emotional well-being and good healthy rhythms that you actively apply in your life to keep you grounded?
Yeah, so I mean, first I just mentioned it, so I do have no notifications that come to my phone, like zero. Sometimes to the frustration of my wife as well, because I don't even get WhatsApps that pop through as a push notification, and my phone's always on silent. So if it's turned around, I don't even know it's there. So that's one thing that's really helped me a lot. Looking at cutting off work times as a general practice. Obviously, you building something or you serving someone, so the there's a difference between setting boundaries and just being arrogant and entitled in not having anyone, you know, kind of rely on you when it's really needed. But just to set healthy boundaries in place, really set up your rest over weekend, whether you want to refer to it as Sabbath or just a rest day or something, to really look at that and how that looks for you to rest, right? It doesn't mean, okay, you can dive into all your personal admin. It means rest. I think our society is almost set up perfectly for that, right? You have 5 days for your more job-focused hours, and then you have one day where you can actually get to some personal admin, and you have one day that you can rest completely. So just looking at that as well. And then to communicate these healthy boundaries to your colleagues, your team, your friends and family, and again, not in an entitled, arrogant way, but in a, I'm wanting to serve you guys the best I can, and so this is what I'm putting in place. Please keep me accountable to it. Not, you need to listen to me or else I'm going to, you know, quit or whatever. It's, help me with this. Keep me accountable in it. And then above all else, you know, to really set direct, diligent time out to spend with the Lord. I think that's something that I try and be relentless about. Be the first to admit it doesn't, you know, it's not as consistent as I would like it to be, but that's something that's really helped. Something that helps me a lot, just practically at work even, considering that I don't have the most rhythmic of roles, it's more project-based, it's more as needed, is a concept called time boxing. So a lot of people have kind of know of time blocking, which is where you kind of block out enough of your calendar to complete a task, whereas time boxing speaks more to setting out, booking out your calendar, but for half an hour or hour for a specific task, and you get done what you can get done in that half an hour, and then you move on. And so what that does is it creates a sense of focused attention to the task at hand, because you know you need to almost get it done. And if you don't, then you box out another time, maybe later the week or the next day. If you know it might take three sessions, and box it out over 3 days, but then you know you move on and you focus on something else because you know it's already been boxed out for a different time. We can take much longer on doing something if we give ourselves, if you book out 3 hours for something, you're going to take 3 hours. If you book out an hour, you're going to take an hour. So that's really just something practical that's helped me kind of complete aspects and tasks that could easily run over into a weekend or into an evening. And then to switch off and get disconnected to your phone as early as possible into the evening. I read then, or you can, you know, do whatever, but that just really helps you switch off. And then I have a time limit on my social media. So I have a 15-minute time cap on my Instagram. I need to kind of stay with it with regards to our brand, but also just with what's happening with friends. But 15 minutes is more than enough. Most days I don't even reach the 15 minutes. So those are some small practical aspects. There's probably a few I'm missing already because I just take it for granted. But those have really helped me just stay almost relaxed and from a place of peace.
Actually, I think we can't stress these things enough. When I have conversations with people and I mention these things, like my phone is also permanently on silent, also no notifications, black background, really keep it as a tool, and not something that can invade my time, my energy. And usually when we have these conversations, especially young people, you can see this almost nervous twitch, like, but how's that possible? Like, how can you have a phone and not be reachable by people? And this is a modern problem. We need to realize that we weren't made to be accessible by phone every moment of our lives. And I'm very strict about the use of my phone and how we operate. But I think it's such a crucial part, not just for entrepreneurs, but for young people, older people in general, to have serious guidelines in terms of how you engage with technology, how you engage with the time and the energy you spend on social media, on Netflix, on those things. Because we don't realize how much time, there's calculations and there's a lot of figures we can throw around, but you're literally losing years of your life if you spend too much time on these platforms and not focusing on putting that energy into a beautiful vision like Employ the World or whatever it might be. I just want to stress that there's so many things that you can do. I don't know if you're a doctor or whatever, it might look different, but for the general population, I do want to stress that there's so much beauty and life that can come from in the shape of energy and time to the people that matters to you most if you treat your technology like tools and not give them the full rein to take control of your life.
100%, Mark, and I think just a practical thing that might help someone realize the almost liberty it gives you. So for me practically, when we had our boy, for the first few days he just slept next to our bed because just a few practical reasons. But day seven, we put him in his own room in his crib, and the weight that was lifted off of not having him 24/7, this responsibility and almost accessibility kind of there, just that hour that he slept like away was this, I didn't even realize that I had this like constant tension. And that can be translated even to think of maybe if you either writing an exam as a student or you working, and think of the invigilator watching you the whole time. The entire 3 hours that you're writing that paper, or your boss sitting next to you for the entire 8-hour day. And then think of you getting there the next day and the boss is not there. You can breathe, right? It's kind of, you can just move in a bit more freedom, a bit more innovation. You don't have to slack on your responsibilities. When the invigilator walks away, you can, okay, they're just not watching me. It's not like you're cheating. It's just, you can just move in a bit more freedom. So it's almost, you can almost try and relate it with that, as to someone can't reach you every single moment. They can still, but you're going to decide when you're going to look at who's reaching you. You're going to decide when you want to contact someone, as opposed to there being this constant invasion of your time and stealing your time. And it's not people's intentions, we know that, but it's just something practically that helped me kind of just, realize what liberty it brings to have those things put in place.
And like you just said, of that feeling of that relief, like often I believe that when we feel anxious or depressed or whatever, it might not be an external force. It might be just internally you feeling anxious because of this responsibility you feel towards social media. Or when I mean your responsibility towards social media, I mean you seeing other people living a life that you're not living, and you feel that that's the life you should be living. And the gap between where you are and the life that you see other people living just like births anxiety, depression, sadness. It takes away all your joy because you think, I should be there, I should have this relationship, I should have this car. And it's so crazy that it's so superficial, but actually underlyingly, no matter how much work we put in, when you look at another entrepreneur, you think, my business should be that big, like, or we should be doing that, or we should have these opportunities. And we don't play in our own boat. We kind of want to jump to a bigger boat, and we want to do that. But everybody, I think, and that's what you alluded to earlier, like just stay grounded in what God is doing in your life and where He's taking you. And if you get that right in terms of taking that life pressure off of you, your life looks completely different.
100%. They say comparison is the killer of contentment. Yeah, 100%. So let's be content in where the Lord wants us.
Yeah, exactly. Tell us about being a father. Like, obviously, that's a massive change. Changes the dynamics of your house and your home and the relationship with your wife and your career and everything. Invite us into that season of your life.
So it's actually funny, our CTO is getting their first child this coming week. And yesterday, last day, I ran and jumped into his arms and literally like a fetal position, and like started crying. And I'm like, I need to get you ready for this. And everyone's laughing. And he's like, Bro, I've been ready for this. You all have made me so ready for this. If I can manage you guys and raise you guys, obviously in a joke, then Charles should be easy. And obviously he was joking, but there was to a degree a bit of truth in that, right? So having built up kind of a company with people whose first job it is, who are needing attention and guidance constantly, and you kind of figuring it out as you go, right? They always kind of give that comparison. Building a startup is like falling out of a plane, or kind of, you know, falling and building the plane before you hit the ground. And I think kind of getting a child was much the same, in the fact that you really figure it out as you go. My wife and I felt we were pretty ready for it emotionally. But no one can be ready for getting a child emotionally. I don't think like it rocks your world in the best of ways, but in a sense that you become so much more reliant on the Lord. And again, kind of bringing back to, I think that's something that I realized with building the company with JobJack, that we are so reliant on the Lord. And if I'm not going to count on His strength, then I'm going to fail completely. And then you get a child, and it tests that to the extreme, right? From a lack of sleep to communication with your wife, to not being able to ease her pain, to not being able to ease the baby's frustration. And so I think it just reminded you how amazingly reliant we are on God, because I think if you're going to try and raise a child, especially the first few months on your own strength, it's going to eat you up. And I think what it's taught me in the most amazing ways is really just what it means to give without receiving back. Our son is now at an age where he's really giving back, sometimes in a bit of a strong-willed way, but mostly just in the most adorable way. But for the first few months, it's really you taking care of this baby, you changing their nappy, you feeding them, you taking them everywhere with you, you losing sleep, and you're not getting any thanks in return. And I think that just puts life into perspective so much, right? Where we are constantly looking for recognition, constantly looking for something in return. And the Lord's not called us to want something in return. The Lord's called us to serve. And I mean, imagine how he feels. I think that puts it into perspective as well. And you taste a bit of like the father's heart, right? As a father, that you give, and the baby still decides to do something wrong. You're like, oh my word, how do you not know this? I just think it's put a real grace on my life. Really being able to manage the company and probably a bit more of a gracious way, a soft-hearted way towards people, but also in a focused way as to say, okay, cool, well, I can see what we can get right if we persist through something. And from a practical sense, time is not your own anymore. If you ever thought time was, it no longer belongs to you once you have a child, especially if you want to spend time with them, which I really do. Yes, exercise and friends took a bit of a backseat in this season, and that's fine. As I mentioned right in the beginning, that was something that I decided it's going to take a backseat, and that's fine. It's a season in my life, and that freed me up so much. But from a holistic perspective, it's been the most joy just to have this little person that loves you with their entire heart, and you seeing it every day, kind of realize more and more. When I get home in the afternoon, he's either at the window looking for my car, or as I walk into the door, he runs to me, bah, 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 bah. It's such a joy to just experience that pure love that's there. Yeah.
Christian, thank you so much for spending time with us. It's been inspiring to see you grow JobJack from when I met you a couple of years ago, from 8 people to the company that is now. I'm very aware of the struggles that you guys also experience, but you've done so well to look after yourself, to look after your team, to look after your family. And that is truly inspiring to see how you can create a big business, a big team, and grow a family in a very healthy way. I think on behalf of South Africa, I want to thank you for taking on such a big mission, or on behalf of the world, for taking on such a big mission to connect jobs to job seekers. Just your genuine passion and concern for your business, for the well-being of your family and your team, and the way that you do it. And you're not just somebody that says these things and not do it. We can actually see the fruit of it in your life, and that's very inspiring. We'll continue to root for you and your team as you go on this quest to employ the world.
Thanks so much, Marco. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Cool.
Thanks, you guys.
Then we've got a few quick fire questions just to end it off. Respond with the first thing that comes into your mind. Which book are you currently reading? You can say the Bible, because hopefully you read.
But they actually, so I read like 3 or 4 books at a time.
Okay.
So one of them is Aragorn. So it's a kind of like a Lord of the Rings trilogy, or the third of the four books.
Okay,
yes,
cool.
That's the most exciting one at the moment.
Cool. Best piece of advice you've ever received?
You can change the world if you don't mind who takes credit.
Wow. Name one item on your bucket list.
Kilimanjaro, and I'm doing that next month.
Sweet. Well done. Your go-to activity when you want to relax or unwind?
Read.
What series are you currently watching?
We just completed the series on the Tour de France. Yeah, so like literally just finished. So I don't have one at the moment, but that was a pretty good one.
Yes. Cool. Favorite sport to watch or play yourself?
Probably rugby. Yeah, I don't really play it anymore, but touchies if the opportunity presents itself.
What's your favorite outdoor activity?
Either surfing or mountain climbing.
Cool. Yeah. Complete the sentence, and this is the last question. Life is all about
people.
Cool. Thank you so much, Christian. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark. We appreciate it as well.
To learn more about Christian's business, JobJack, and their mission to employ the world, check out their website, www.jobjack.co.za, or follow them on Instagram, at JobJackApp. Thanks for listening to the Framework to Flourish podcast, hosted by Marco Haasbroek and produced in collaboration with Imagine This. For today's episode, Stefani de Tooy was our coordinator, John Rehoog our technical producer, and Karina Kloppers our content producer. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn at Flourish Workshops to stay up to date with our latest episodes, workshops, and retreats. Until next time, keep going and growing.